So this is October 2nd, 2012, in Vrindavan, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Texts 1 through 24. So one thing I'm not going to discuss at all in this section is the biographies of the various personalities who came to see Bhishma. That's on in the purports of text 6 to 8. I personally found myself, when I was just new to Krishna consciousness, that reading those biographies really helped me to understand the stories and what was going on and appreciate Krishna book, not having been brought up with Mahabharata stories. But we're not going to discuss those here at all. But they are quite helpful. And if you're not that familiar with the stories and the tradition, I would really advise that you take advantage of Srila Prabhupada's little mini encyclopedias here and there. Okay, so let's read through these verses. Starting with text 1 to 24. Suta Goswami said, being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhisthira went to the scene of the massacre. There, Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows about to pass away. At that time, all his brothers followed him on beautiful chariots drawn by first-class horses, decorated with gold ornaments. With them were Vyasadeva and rishis like Jomya, the learned priests of the Pandavas and others. O sage among the Brahmanas, Lord Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, also followed, seated on a chariot with Arjuna. Thus King Yudhisthira appeared very aristocratic, like Kuvera, surrounded by his companions, the Yuyakas. Seeing him, Bhishma, lying on the ground like a demigod fallen from the sky, the Pandava king Yudhisthira, along with his younger brothers and Lord Krishna, bowed down before him. Just to see the chief of the descendants of King Bharata, Bhishma, all the great souls in the universe, namely the rishis amongst the demigods, brahmanas, and kings, all situated in the quality of goodness, were assembled there. All the sages like Parvatmuni, Narada, Domya, Vyas, the incarnation of God, Brihadaspa, Vardaraj, Parasaram, and disciples, Vasistha, Indra, Pramada, Trita, Gritsamada, Asita, Kakshivan, Gotama, Atri, Koshika, and Sudarshana were present. And many others like Sukadeva Goswami and other purified souls, Kasyapa and Angirasa and others, all accompanied by their respective disciples, arrived there. Bhishma Dev, who was the best amongst the eight Vasus, received and welcomed all the great and powerful rishis who were assembled there, for he knew perfectly all the religious principles according to time and place. Lord Shri Krishna is situated in everyone's heart, yet he manifests his transcendental form by his internal potency. This very Lord was sitting before Bhishma Dev, and since Bhishma Dev knew of his glories, he worshipped him duly. The sons of Maharaj Pandu were sitting silently nearby, overtaken with affection for their dying grandfather. Seeing this, Bhishma Dev congratulated them with feeling. There were tears of ecstasy in his eyes, for he was overwhelmed by love and affection. Bhishma Dev said, oh, what terrible sufferings and what terrible injustices you good souls suffer for being the sons of religion personified. You did not deserve to remain alive under those tribulations, yet you were protected by the Brahmanas, God, and religion. As far as my daughter-in-law Kunti is concerned, upon the great general Pandu's death, she became a widow with many children, and therefore she suffered greatly. And when you were grown up, she suffered a great deal also because of your actions. In my opinion, this is all due to inevitable time, under whose control everyone and every planet is carried, just as the clouds are carried by the wind. Oh, how wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. It is irreversible. Otherwise, how can there be reverses in the presence of King Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod controlling religion, Bhima, the great fighter with a club, the great Roman Arjuna with his mighty weapon Gandiva, and above all, the Lord, the direct well-wisher of the Pandavas. O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord Shri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. O best among the descendants of Bharata Yudhisthira, I maintain, therefore, that all this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. You are now the appointed administrative head, and now, my Lord, you should now take care of those subjects who were now rendered helpless. This Sri Krishna is no other than the inconceivable original personality of Godhead. He is the first Narayana, the supreme enjoyer, but he is moving amongst the descendants of King Vrishni, just like one of us, and he is bewildering us with his self-created energy. O King, Lord Shiva, Narada, the sage among the demigods, and Kapila, the incarnation of Godhead, all know very confidentially about his glories through direct contact. O King, that personality whom, out of ignorance only, you thought to be your maternal cousin, your very dear friend, well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, etc., is that very personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Being the absolute personality of Godhead, he is present in everyone's heart. He is equally kind to everyone. He is free from the false ego of differentiation. Therefore, whatever he does is free from material inebriety. He is equibalanced. Yet despite him being equally kind to everyone, he has graciously come before me while I'm entering my life, for I am his unflinching servitor. The personality of Godhead who appears in the mind of the devotee by attentive devotion and meditation and by chanting of the holy name releases the devotee from the bondage of fruitive activities at the time of his quitting the material body. May my Lord, who is four-handed and whose beautifully decorated lotus face with eyes as red as the rising sun, is smiling, kindly await me at that moment when I quit this material body. So I think what we'll do, we'll have questions on this at the beginning of our next class. I'm going to do the second theme first, because I want to make sure that I cover it. And that is Bhishma, the expert counselor. So, does anyone here ever counsel anybody? Who here ever counsels anybody? Anybody at all? And none, the rest of you never give advice to anybody. Anybody here ever give advice to anybody else? Okay, do you ever give advice to yourself? Okay, why don't we learn from Bhishma? We're going to have a counselor training session. How to be a good counselor for other people and even for yourself. Do you ever get despondent? Anybody ever get despondent? Anybody ever get sad? Anybody ever get sad? Okay. Bewildered? Anybody ever get bewildered? Okay. Here we go. So this is Bhishma, the expert counselor. Okay, first of all, text 9. He can apply principles to time, place, and circumstance. He can take the principles and apply them to time, place, and circumstance. He doesn't just apply everything the same everywhere to everyone. This is a wonderful topic. We have actually a 3-hour presentation we put together for the GBC, which we never presented to the GBC because they didn't want a woman to present it, although they invited us to do it. But we did present to some other leaders in Radhadesh. So we have a 3-hour presentation, which took us about 4 months to create, actually, about time, place, and circumstance, and how Krishna is described as the knower of time, place, and circumstance, and one who knows it also can apply. One must apply to time, place, and circumstance. One must. So when counseling yourself, when counseling others, when advising others, you must take eternal principles of truth, but apply them to that circumstance. The same eternal principles of truth are not applied the same to everybody always. Now, Bhishma has a flow of points. It's very logical, his flow. We're just going to go in order. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. So starting with text 12. He says, you're properly situated under the Brahmins, God, and Dharma. So we talked about this in the last chapter, that are you within that fence? I don't know what's happening to me. Is this good or bad? Is this Krishna? Is this Maya? What do I do? That was Yudhisthira's position. First question, are you within the fence of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra? Are you within the fence of Brahmanas, that Sadhu, God, and religion? Have you done something wrong? Have you broken out of the fence? Have you walked out of Lakshman's circle? Or are you still protected? He said, you just do your protected. So that's the first thing to ask yourself or others. Are you protected? If you're protected, now, how brilliantly Bhishma Dev deals with this. Yudhisthira is worried about how he hurt others. Bhishma doesn't even talk about it at all. Sometimes we don't directly head-on address what somebody's coming to us about. Now, they might not like that at first. I saw Prabhupada do that. Somebody would ask a question about something, and Prabhupada would answer as if they'd asked about something else. I saw him do that many times. So Bhishma does not say, okay, let's talk about all those people who died in the battle. That's what Yudhisthira was talking about. Bhishma said, let's talk about what you went through. He switches it, right? Correct? Still have one person who hasn't changed. You all following this? Yudhisthira's like, how many people have died because of me? And Bhishma doesn't talk about it. He said, you really suffered. He changes the subject. And then in 13 he says, and your mother really suffered. Because Yudhisthira might say, well, I don't care about my suffering. What about your mother? She really suffered. And you both suffered so much. He's just focusing on the Pandavas' suffering. He doesn't talk about the battle at all. Not at all. He said, you suffered so much that I don't even know how you stayed alive. He said, anybody else would have died. Changes the whole perspective. A good advisor knows how to change the perspective. And then he says, and who can say why you suffered? You suffered like clouds or pushed by the wind. It was just destiny. Because after all, you're in the protection of the Brahmins, God, and Dharma, so it couldn't have been karmic suffering. It must have been the will of providence. Talks in a very general way. Kala. It's destiny, right? In 14, in 15. Just destiny. It's beyond your control. You couldn't do anything about this suffering. And interesting, although there were pious acts, great personalities, this is in 15, expert management, good weapons, and direct supervision of Krishna, so there was suffering. We might think, you know, if I get it all together, I won't suffer. He said, you had it all together, and still, it was just suffering. And we can't know the plan of destiny. That's not possible. If you say, why? Why is time and destiny, this is in 16, why is time and destiny made me suffer? You can't know the plan. Nobody can know the plan. Even Shiva, Narada, Kapila. Nobody can understand the plan. So, what do you need to do now, Yudhisthira? You need to take care of your helpless subjects. He bypassed the whole thing. And then what did he do? In 18, he says, you know who this time is. You know who this destiny is. He's sitting right there. His name is Krishna, and he's the person you love. How amazing. Only what Bhishma did here in a few verses that no one else could do, and Yudhisthira was suffering so much. So it really behooves us to study this. You suffered so much, your mother suffered so much. This was all inconceivable destiny, that even though you were pious and perfect, still no one can control destiny. No one knows the plan of destiny. Your job now is just to take care of your subjects. Don't worry about all this. Oh, and you know who engineered all this? He's sitting right there, and he's your friend. And how does Yudhisthira feel about Krishna? He loves him. And Bhishma then explains in 19 that no one can know Krishna's plan, but you can know as far as why does Krishna do this, what is it, how does this plan? No one. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, even if you ask him, he will make some excuse and he won't tell you. Doesn't matter who you are. You can be the Mahajanas and you can say, Krishna, what's your plan? And he'll just smile. And do you know the story? It's no fun if you know the ending. He's not going to tell you. Your friend lends you a book and you say, how does it end? They're just going to smile. Because I'm not going to tell you that. That'll ruin the whole thing. Krishna doesn't reveal his plan like that. But ultimately, what is Krishna's plan? Really, Krishna's plan is not doing this, doing that. It's increasing the bhav. It's increasing the love between him and his devotees. That's what it's really all about. That's what we all want. We all want a relationship where love is always increasing. When people get married, what their hope is that, you know, I'm madly in love with you now, and when we're 64, like that old Beatles song, you know, then we'll be even more in love. Now, generally in this world, that doesn't happen. Generally, people have crazy love when they're young, and it gets to be more like sort of a mature, seasoned friendship over time. It doesn't have that crazy intensity. It doesn't go get increase and increase and increase. Although Aniruddha and Usha said their love increased four times by four times every day. And Priya was it. Vahishmati and Priyavrata also said their love increased, but generally that doesn't, it's not like that. Or, you know, our attachment to a child also, when they're a baby, it's very intense, and when they're 30, it's not so intense. Generally it's like that. But what we're looking for love that increases. You know, love is a kind of madness in English, in American English at least, we say falling in love. I think when I was in Russia once, they said their expression is you lose your head. Is that right? Is that the Russian expression? You lose your head in love? And what sort of sannyasis say? Krishna also falls. He falls in love with Radharani. Love is madness. If you've ever been in love with anyone, it's a kind of madness, isn't it? I'm not going to ask how many of you have ever been in love, but it's a kind of, it's madness. It's madness. You only see your beloved's good qualities. You see this with parents and children also, because I've taught a lot of children. And parents are crazy when it comes to their children. They're not rational. They're just not. You know, when you're a teacher, it's sometimes very difficult. Because no matter how intelligent the parents are, whatever, how sober, and in general, when they're talking about their child, then they're crazy. I'm a parent too, so I'm not picking on other parents. But love is his madness. Krishna is so much in love with his devotees, he says, Apichet Susuracharo, even if they do something terrible, they're still saying it. Krishna also enjoys this madness of love. But in the material world, that madness of love doesn't last, generally. Generally. You know, when it comes to man-woman love, the chemicals last for about 18 to 20 months. And then the madness subsides, and then you notice, oh, who did I actually marry? But with Krishna, it never subsides. Therefore, you know, Radharani is saying, you may be a Lampataha, and Krishna is a Lampataha, but I still love you. It doesn't matter, you know, it just doesn't matter. I love you anyway. And this is real love. So Krishna's idea is for this real love between him and the devotees, and between the pure devotees and each other also, to always be increasing in intensity. Now, our material body can only handle a certain amount of intense emotion. There are people who die from broken hearts, actually, literally, from intense emotion. And so therefore, the higher stages of prema cannot even be experienced in a material body. But the spiritual body can experience ever-increasing degrees of spiritual emotion that would break the material body. The body just wouldn't be able to handle it. The sattvika bhavs, the shivering, crying, etc., hair standing on end, that's involuntary. That's the body expressing this madness of love. Involuntary. And voluntary is anubhav, and the word we find here, in fact, is is above. It's in text 19. Anubhava. So everything Krishna's doing is for bhava. Bhava means emotion. The word bhava also means existence. To be, to exist. Descartes says, I think, therefore I am. We say, I feel, therefore I am. I desire, therefore I am. So our essence of existence is desire and feeling and emotion. Bhakti is an entering realm of intense emotion. So that's really Krishna's plan. Krishna's plan is to do whatever to increase that love he feels for the devotees, that the devotees feel for him, that the devotees feel for each other. A constant festival of ever-increasing love with all different varieties, with grief and exultation and comedy. You know, like we study Shakespeare. Prabhupada also studied Shakespeare. Prabhupada seemed to particularly like The Merchant of Venice, by the way. One morning, all he did was tell the story of The Merchant of Venice. He talked about Merchant of Venice in regard to, I'm just saying this in case you think I'm in line for talking about Shakespeare. I just want to cover myself so you don't report me for Santa when he was talking about Shakespeare. Prabhupada also quoted Shakespeare. Quoted that Shakespeare in regard to the book distribution from The Merchant of Venice, the quality of mercy is not strained, it falls like a gentle rain from heaven, it is twice blessed. Bless those who give and those who receive. So Shakespeare was very expert. Like Macbeth, if you're familiar with Macbeth. So it's a tragedy, and it's getting really intense because the king's just been murdered. And then he has this drunk porter come and creates a comedy. So there's comedy that relieves the tension of the murder. So these expert dramatists, they know how to take your emotions. You know, you'll have intense fear and then a moment of comedy. To take you on this journey. So Krishna also takes the devotees through this. Krishna is a lot more expert than Shakespeare. So Krishna takes us on this journey of emotions. Oh, Krishna's in the coils of the Kaliya's serpent. Oh, now he's gotten out and now he's dancing. Oh, look at him dancing. Oh, but now the snake's trying to kill him. So this roller coaster, it's not boring. If you want boring, the Brahmajyoti is always available. You just want boring peace, that is also possible. Krishna will give you that also. So that's Krishna's plan. Alright, now let's look at this bhava. So we're going to look at the love between Krishna and the devotees, and the love from devotees to Krishna. So, in text 2 and 3, why did the Pandavas come in opulence? Because Krishna wanted Bhishma to be happy. He knew that Bhishma's whole thing was, I want Yudhisthira to be the king. So Krishna made sure that when they come, Yudhisthira really looks like the king. That Bhishma can say, yes, let's become the king. 17, which is very important, that Krishna teaches the world through his devotees. And I talked about that briefly in the last chapter. That, you know, Bhishma will take the role of the bad guy, of the foolish person, of the person who followed the lower dharma. So Krishna could teach a lesson by using the devotee. And the devotee is willing. Devotee is willing. You know, there's a humorous t-shirt people wear. If I can't be a good example, at least I can be a warning. Have you seen that shirt? But the devotee actually is willing to do that. Okay, Krishna, you can use me anyway. You can use me as a good example. You can use me as a warning. Like Bharma. Or like Yudhisthira gambling. And the devotee may become bewildered. This is also this bond between the Lord and the Krishna loves the devotee so much that he's able to ask them. That's great love. Someone asks you to do something that makes you look foolish, right? You have to really love somebody to be willing to look foolish for them. Then in 19, whoa, what a statement. In 19, Tribulations imposed upon the devotee by the Lord constitute another exchange of transcendental bhava. You might say, Krishna, I don't want that bhava, thank you very much. But if we realize that both the good and the bad things are to increase the love, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for this eternal, loving, playful relationship with Krishna. That's what we're looking for. And if tribulations help to increase that, then as Kunti says, let them happen again and again and again. From the point of view of the realized devotee, good things and bad things are the same. I mean, my body's been giving me lots of trouble the last few days, and today I was thinking, ultimately what I'm supposed to see from this is that my body is not a shelter. It's a really lousy shelter. You know, that's our ultimate shelter in the material world, is my own body, right? If I can just get this medicine or do this diet, then my body will protect me. It doesn't. You know, if you're very young and healthy, you may not relate to what I'm saying. It's just not a very good shelter. It doesn't always work the way I want it to work. So that's also Krishna dealing with us, to show us it's a false shelter. If there's a storm coming and you're staying in a little wooden shack and someone says you need to get out and you don't get out, they may shake it. See, it's not solid. Krishna, help! Somebody's shaking my house. I'm shaking your house, you foolish person. I'm trying to show you it's made of sticks and you need to get out. Don't have it as your shelter. Then in 21, that Krishna gives guidance, this is a very important point. By the way, when I say something's a very important point, that means it may be on your test. So this is another very important point. By the way, good teachers always tell you what's important, what's not important. If you ever teach, make sure you do that, please. Don't expect your students to remember everything equally. Just like Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he tells Arjuna in the 10th chapter, what does Krishna say at the end of the 10th chapter? Near the end, he's listed all these opulences of fishes, I am the shark, of mountains, I am the Mount Meru, of movable things, I am the Himalayas. Then he says, but what use is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? In other words, he said, this stuff I just told you is not very important. Not important. It will not be on your exam. Krishna just told Arjuna, okay, I told you this, you asked me about it, so I told you, but it's not important. It won't be on your exam. And then the beginning of the 14th chapter, Krishna says, this knowledge I'm about to tell you is better than anything else. So this is important. So the good teachers, they flag for you. This, I'm telling you, this was not so important. Like I tell you every class, these are the minor points. This, it's there, it's interesting, it's like extra credit. Not so important. And this is very good. This you have to know. Yam yam bhakti sram bhava. Remember, ante narayana smriti. That's what's important. To know anamaya pranamaya vyanamaya, that's not so important. It won't be on the exam. That makes sense to everybody? So when you're teachers, it's an important thing to do something first, and that means you have to know what's important also. Alright. So Krishna gives guidance to everyone, text 21. Everyone. But the kind of guidance he gives depends on what people want to know. I may ask directions to Lloyd Bazaar, or I may ask directions to Radhakund, and I'll get different directions depending on what I ask. So the tourist office gives guidance to everyone. One person says, where's the ATM machine? The other person asks, what's the darshan time? So Krishna's giving guidance to everyone. A recurring theme in these two chapters is Krishna's neutrality and equality, which we talked about in another class. But that means it's me. The problem is me. The problem is my receptivity. And then 22, how Krishna's pleased when the devotee addresses him in terms of his relationship with his other devotees. right? It says, the appearance of Lord Krishna, the deathbed of Bhishma Ji, is due to being an unflinching devotee. Arjuna had some bodily relation with Krishna because the Lord happened to be his maternal cousin, but Bhishma had no such bodily relation. Therefore, the cause of attraction was due to the intimate relation of the soul. Yet, because the relation of the... This is what really gets me. Yet, because the relation of the body is very pleasing and natural, the Lord is more pleased when he's addressed as the son of Marajananda, the son of Yasoda, the lover of Radharani. This affinity by bodily relation with the Lord is another feature of reciprocating loving service with the Lord. Prabhu was talking about something that to me is material. Bodily relation is very pleasing and natural. Obviously, I feel more attached to people I have a bodily relationship with than I do to people I don't, generally. Right? What do they say? Blood is thicker than water. How does Krishna feel that way? Or Krishna has a bodily relationship with someone? What does that mean? That's how Prabhupada's talking about it, that Krishna's pleased if you say, oh, you're the son of Yasoda, you're the son of Nanda Maharaj, you're the lover of Radharani. Because this concept we have here, that someone who has a bodily relationship with me, that's tighter, that's more pleasing, that has its origin in something. It has its origin in this eternal family of Krishna. So Krishna is pleased by those who have that kind of relationship with him. And if we want to please Krishna, we can refer to it. In 21, Bhishma talks about how Krishna is equibalanced. And Prabhupada says in the purport, he is an equibalanced ego. The way he says this, the material conception of ego is equibalanced in him. He does not feel, therefore, inferior by becoming the chariot driver of his pure devotee. So for me, I don't like it if somebody makes me feel inferior. I feel offended. I had a situation where some devotees were cooking for me, and then they said, well, what we'll do is we'll cook and we'll eat, and then we'll bring you the leftovers down in the basement. So I said, I'm not going to eat anything you cook if that's the way it's going to be. I said, no, I'm not. I said, I feel like I'm the dog eating outside the house or on the servant, eating in the servant's quarters later. I'm not going to eat. My ego was offended. Have equal balanced ego. But Krishna has equal balanced ego. He doesn't feel offended like that. I feel offended. Probably you all have equal balanced ego, and none of you feel offended when anyone insults you. I feel offended. How dare they insult me? I am a great personality. But Krishna is not like that. For him, being treated as the servant of Arjuna, he enjoys it. So Krishna's love with the devotee is not dependent on being treated in a particular way as superior, inferior. He doesn't have this kind of concept that I'm great and I have to be treated like a great person. You might try to notice how many times when we feel angry and upset is because we feel people haven't treated us with enough consideration and respect. Krishna's not like that. We talked about this before, how that Krishna has so much love for his devotee, he sets things up, his bond with his devotee, so Bhishma says you can't win even if you're Bhishma, if you're on the wrong side. And in text 4, Krishna bows to Bhishma, because he's apparently the junior. So this is the bond between Krishna and his devotees from Krishna's side. From the devotee's side, in text 14, the devotees don't try to know Krishna's plan, they just follow the instructions. You know, even if you're in the ordinary military, if you're the private, you don't go to the general and say, tell me all the plans. You know, sometimes people ask me, Armila, what do you think will happen with this thing and this kind and that thing? I said, I don't know. I'm not invited to the meeting of the generals, you know. Advaitacharya, Lord Jananda, they don't invite me to their meetings. How they're going to take over the world. I'm just a little peon. So my favorite example of this is from D-Day. You all know D-Day in World War II? So the Nazis had taken over Europe, and the British were holding out, so the Americans, Canadians, Australians, etc., the Allies, they joined in Great Britain, and they crossed the channel. They fooled the Nazis to think they were going to cross at the Pas de Calais, which is the most narrow part of the channel. That's where the channel is now. But instead, they crossed at Normandy. They had pulled a lot of the German force to the Pas de Calais so they could cross at Normandy. But the whole coast was fortified. The Germans wanted to be ready wherever the Allies would show up. And they came in big boats, so some of the soldiers got so seasick in the boat, they fell off the boats, and they died. Some of them, as they were moving from the big boats to the little boats, because there was no, like, port, it's not like the Nazis were going to welcome them, you know. So when they were moving from the big boats to the little boats, they got shot and they died. Some of them got shot in the little boat. Some of them got shot moving from the little boats to the beach. Some of them got shot and killed moving up the beach. The generals knew only 30% of these men are going to live to the end of the day. But the soldiers, they don't say, what's the plan? They just follow the instructions. And they're all heroes. The people who actually made the beachhead and knocked out the big guns and established the Nazi influence, the Allied influence that eventually knocked down the Nazis, they're heroes, and all the people who died, even the ones who died in the big boats, who never made it to the little boats, they're all heroes. So the devotees are willing to follow the plan of the Lord. Whatever my part is, it does. That's the love of the devotee for the Lord. And the devotee accepts Krishna as the best authority. Text 18, very nice. Prabhupada talks about how everyone has to follow authority. And this bhava that the Lord is giving out, it attracts the mahajanas, it attracts even the liberated souls. And it attracts the rishis who all had affection for Bhishma, text 6 to 8. All these rishis are in goodness, and yet they're attracted by this love between Bhishma and Krishna. And the devotees express their love for Krishna by working under Guru Sadhu and Shastra, by working under Dharma, the Brahmanas, and God. The devotees also express their love for Krishna by exhibiting their own free will. Text 1, that Bhishma's lying on the arrows was his own choice. It's not forced. The devotees express their bhava, as we already mentioned, with Bhishma, by knowing how to apply things to time, place, and circumstance. They don't apply things blindly. By appreciating Krishna's mercy, text 22, Bhishma said, although the Lord is equipoised, he's coming to me at death. And ultimately, by entering into the samadhi of bhakti, in text 23. This samadhi of bhakti is not the mechanical samadhi of yoga, of Ashtanga Yoga. It's a samadhi of love. When I love someone, I think about them all the time. Not because I put myself in a mechanical hypnotic trance, but because I can't not think about them. I can't get them out of my mind. My mother used to watch Broadway musicals, and one of them is this woman falls in love with this man, and she's trying to stop thinking about him, and she's singing this song, I'm going to wash that man right out of my hair, right out of my mind. She's washing her hair on the stage on Broadway. Wash that man right out of my hair. But she couldn't, because she loved him. So the devotees can't. The gopis are thinking, they're talking in Vrindavan. They say, let's stop talking about Krishna. He's gone to Mathura. He's thinking about something else. Krishna's not talking about us. Of course, Krishna was talking about them. Let's forget about this Krishna. They can't. So that's samadhi is what we're liking. And the humility, the devotee's bhava is in humility that Bhishma is saying, Krishna, please be here. Please be here in your form of Narayan. Please be here in your four-handed form that I want to see. And please give me a 24. Please, wherever I go, I don't know if I'm going back to Godhead, Bhishma is saying, wherever I go, please let me be in this samadhi of love. Let me always be absorbed in you. It doesn't matter where I go. So one important point I didn't have time to cover, so I'll cover that this afternoon. That's from text 11. And that relates very much to Kunti's dealing with affection for the Pandavas. So this will be the first time I didn't finish something. I hope you forgive me. So we'll make sure that we cover that point briefly this afternoon. We start at 2:30 and just, so we've done everything there and you have the flow, and I will see you again, Krishna willing, at 2:30. And at 2:30 we'll do just text 11 and then we'll do 25 to 33 of this chapter. I'll also take your questions on this. So we'll spend the beginning with your questions on this section.